Writing that down the map.
They've got something new now. It's called the Press Box.
You're back in the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Crean.
The man with a plan tells you exactly how it's going and how it shall be. That is the second hour of the show right now on the Press Box. It's Patrick Crean and myself, Joel Blank. Tyler Scott keeping us on the air and chiming into the conversation, as you can too. 713-780-3776. You can call or text, otherwise Twitch or Twitter. I was talking about the Olympics. My girl, by the way, I'm claiming her now as I claimed her last night. But you are missing something if you didn't see Sydney. Sydney, is it Sydney McCullough? She set the world record last night in the 400 hurdles. Oh my goodness. In so many ways, she's outstanding. But there were so many races last night on the track that were fun to watch. And I know that they were milking the whole last Simone Biles on the beam and all that other stuff. But there was just so much, so many, like A&M. A&M has Athing Mu. She won the 800 meter for the first time since 1964. An American won the 800, and she did it in fantastic fashion. That was fun to watch.
McLaughlin.
Yeah, she is Sydney McLaughlin. She's not only the best there is; she's smoking hot, and so that was fun to watch. The girl that finished third in the 200 is a Harvard grad. She's also easy to look at for the United States, and she got the bronze. But on the track, I mean, it's clear. Yeah, there are rare cases where there are, you know, there's some Jamaican athletes, both men and women, that are great and everything. But the American track stars are so fun to watch. There was a lot of good Olympics last night. So I watched the track, and then I turned the page and found the baseball game on. Team USA against the Dominican Republic. Scott Kazmir pitched five innings. Yeah, Houston Scott Kazmir pitched five innings. Scoreless baseball. David Robertson, the one-time really, really good arm out of the Yankees bullpen, closed the game. Gave up a home run late, but it was 3-1. USA now in line to play for the gold medal. But Kazmir is going to get some looks. He was with the Giants earlier this season, and then they sent him back down after a start. And maybe it was for the Olympics. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But he's not a starter anymore, but his curveball's still major league level, and I think he'll get some looks. But more so than that, and I said this, if guys that everybody listens to the show earlier in the year, I mentioned this multiple times. When the Olympic team was being put together, I said David Robertson's going to pitch for the USA team, but David Robertson's going to be on a major league team after the Olympics, and he has given me no reason to change that thought. He still has really good stuff. And there are teams out there, dare I say, if the Astros wanted to improve one more arm in the bullpen, David Robertson would not be anybody that I would be upset with.
No, and that's a guy who's been a closer, who's pitched in a lot of high leverage, high importance games. He's been to the playoffs. That's the kind of veteran arm that you'd like to put and have that guy pitching middle relief who can work in a setup role if you need him to. I'm actually surprised that Robertson didn't already have a job, but when the Olympics is over, he's gonna sign on somewhere pretty quick. So what, Dodgers? Because they sign everybody?
Well, and they spend money on everybody. So they'll probably overpay to get him to make sure that no one else gets him, like when they swooped in and got Scherzer from the Padres. They're going to do whatever they're going to do to try and be the best team that money can buy and buy another championship. But that's fine because, I mean, if you're the Astros, you don't need him. If you get him, He's not going to be a detriment to your bullpen. He's better than some of the guys you could still conceivably put out there, though I don't think he's going to be choices 1 through 5 for Dusty on a regular night basis when Presley gets back because he has so many guys to choose from. But I'm just saying, those two guys, if you're looking for additions in the pitching department before we get to the playoffs, now that the trade deadline's over and there isn't a second deadline coming, those are two guys I'd keep an eye on.
All right, legit, if you're an Astros fan, how good are you going to feel? How hard are you going to, celebrate when the Dodgers have to play that wild card game, that one game winner take all wild card game against the Giants with their $300 million payroll, and they lose.
I would love it. I would love it if the Padres knock them out. I'd love it if the Giants knocked them out. I'd love it just basically if anybody not. No, look, I'd love it if the Brewers knocked them out because they've knocked the Brewers out several times in the last couple of years. But at the same time, to see all this money being spent, to see, you know, it's not cagey general manager movement when you're trying to do the things like James Click did. Because how in the world he stayed under the tax threshold and didn't have to give up any key prospects to completely overhaul this bullpen, I still don't know.
Neither but is I Seattle, by the way.
Right, exactly. And Jerry DePoto's on the other side of this. But at the same time, you look at the Dodgers and say, that's not good general managing. That's just having the biggest bank account and just going, I'm going to go pay Cole Hamels. I'm going to go and I can afford to give up my top two prospects to get Trey Turner and Max Scherzer, and I can afford to pay both of them as well, and I can continue to throw money at anybody else that I might need because of the fact that I'm the Dodgers, and that's why I want them to suck it really bad between now and the World Series.
Not that I want to give credit to the Yankees at any time ever.
Please don't.
But, you know, Brian Cashman made a lot of additions to the Yankees without spending a single dollar and without giving up any of his top eight prospects. That's pretty shrewd moving for a guy who normally is on a team where, yeah, you could just write whatever check you want. He can't do that anymore because Hal Steinbrenner doesn't run the Yankees the way George did, and they run it more like a business. And Hal said, you know what? We're not going to be taxpayers this year. So all the stuff that we did in the past stops. As of right now, we are not going to be taxpayers. You may not go over the line, period, the end. Figure it out.
Yeah.
And he did.
Yeah.
And I think once James Click knew he wasn't going to get Max Scherzer, the willingness by ownership here to go over the tax line probably dwindled down to zero. And he made three terrific moves to bring in guys and just maneuver the cap just enough so that they didn't go over the cap. He kept his owner happy. He made his team a lot better. No, what they're doing in L.A. is just throw a check at it.
Yeah, it's not like really experienced cagey general manager movement. It's just big bank beat little bank. And we got all the money, and we're going to do everything that we can do to go for broke every year because we can and you can't.
And when it doesn't work,
it makes it that much sweeter.
Yeah, it also is when you start to see guys on the hot seat. And you see heads start to roll because when they got to write that $300 million check and they don't get any playoff money, all the bean counters start putting red numbers and sending that to ownership. They don't like to see the red numbers. And they're going to have some red numbers if they don't make some playoff money.
And to your point on Cashman, look, the Yankees are also a big money team. And they do throw a lot of money at a lot of players. But in this particular trade deadline alone, the fact that they were able to get Rizzo, the fact that they were able to make the moves that they made, like Gallo, and they didn't have to give up their top prospects, is an accomplishment of someone that's an experienced general manager. The fact that it wasn't just money driven when they went out and got, you know, re-signed LeMahieu and signed Garrett Cole the year before and when they continue to throw dollars. I get that the Yankees are not to be confused with small market and they are more like the Dodgers than any other team. But at the same time, Cashman gets credit for what he did this year, no doubt about it. Because I thought that they were going to have, if they were desperate, they were going to really have to gut their farm system to try and stay relevant, and they haven't had to do that.
And just, you know, kind of just showing the difference between, you know, what the Dodgers have the biggest payroll and what the Yankees have the second biggest payroll, mm-hmm. and how they operated at the deadline. One team still trying to have some, and we're talking about the Yankees, so this is rare, but have some kind of financial restraint while the Dodgers are just drunken sailor on shore leave throwing money everywhere.
So Jed Hoyer, the GM of the Dodgers, you get no love from me. You get 0 points. But they continue to do it. As you mentioned, to sign Cole Hamels, he had a workout on the 16th of last month. I believe it was in Arlington. A ton of teams were there. I had said the Astros should be there because at that point I didn't know if they were going to be active as they were and ended up being before the trade deadline. But he's a lefty too, so you want to see what he had left in the tank. And because, again, we're talking about the one area that they didn't address at the deadline, which was the up and downs of the starting pitching. And I threw it out at the start of the show. I'll throw it out again. But are you guys with me? I think right now, if there's a game one of a playoff series, whether it be the divisional round or further on down the line, I've changed my stance completely. I believe Lance McCullers gets the ball in game one.
No doubt. Lance McCullers is getting the ball. And before the season started, maybe it was going to be Framber Valdez before he got hurt and now suddenly can't find the strike zone again. But Lance McCullers was you know, maybe number two in that lineup behind Valdez when he was pitching at his absolute best.
You think so?
Maybe. Valdez was probably the only other guy I would have given the ball to in game one over McCullers.
I would say I agree with you. Going into the season and before the injury, Framber's your game one starter because of what he did last year. And obviously, I hate to say this, but throw Spider Tack into there too because it's changed a lot of people's ability to have control of the baseball. And I'm not saying he did or he didn't. But I just know that going into the season, Framber was my number one. I think early in the season, Zach Greinke became the number one because he was effective. Even without being a power pitcher, he was getting guys out. He was really mowing down lineups. He looked like he still had plenty. Now, he's had some hiccups. And because of those two factors and the fact that since Framber's been back, the control hasn't been what it was a year ago, that's why with the way McCullers has been pitching, and with seven road wins already, I think it's changed to where I'd go McCullers one. Two's an interesting discussion, too. Because I think from experience, it leads you to believe Greinke should be your two. And he's the exact opposite of the power arm that McCullers had because he was popping 96-plus last night. And then you keep them a little bit off base. Maybe go McCullers, Greinke, and then Framber in three?
I think if Framber finds the touch again, mm-hmm. and we're not walking four or five guys a game, Framber goes back to the number two slot, and then you've got righty, lefty, and then your off-speed guy in Greinke in the three spot. If Framber is still going to have issues, before last season, Framber took the big leap because of the improved command. If he can't find that improved command, then yeah, you might go McCullers, Greinke, give the change in look, and then go to the lefty. Mm-hmm. So you get three very different looks, three straight games.
There you have it. As we continue to talk a little bit more baseball about the best thing going in Houston sports right now, that's your Houston Astros. Rockets getting ready for summer league after their draft, and with free agency day two in the books, lots more money being thrown at lots more players. Not sure that lots of them deserve as much as they got, but we'll get to that. We'll get to a familiar face going to another new place as someone was bought out yesterday, and unfortunately it wasn't John Wall. But there's hope because of it, so there's lots more to get to. It's the Press Box at ESPN.
When it comes to sports betting, SportsMapBets.com is the site you need. From weekly betting guides to single game breakdowns of the point spread, money line, over under, and more, SportsMapBets has all the info you need to make the best play. SportsMapBets.com. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Hey, the man with the deep pipes has got it right. It's Tyler Scott as well along for the ride as we go all the way till 4 and then the show after us. I want to give a shout-out to Greg Meyer. I always confuse his valuable input from a listener perspective with that of Beerman Greg. Beerman Greg is normally on the Twitch, while Greg Meyer is normally on the Twitter. And so I want to give credit where credit is due and shout out to Greg Meyer. Very, very much appreciated for the information that you throw forth on a daily basis. So we appreciate that. Appreciate you. And Patrick, people are texting wanting to know, because you are on the show, is late hits happening?
There'll be no late hits for the rest of the week because I'm going to be in with Joel today, tomorrow, and Friday when we're at 5 under. So no late hits this week. Also, big thanks to our buddy AR Platinum for the
no doubt
for the pizza. Very solid.
Yeah, very, very much appreciated, you guys. And that's why, as boxers, we appreciate the loyalty and the support. That's always awesome. NBA, we'll get to the day two movement if there's anything. Rockets didn't do anything. They still have a little money to play with. They're looking at potential low-cost, low-risk veterans that might be able to help them out to some degree. But the big news out of the NBA, two big stories. One I tipped you off to yesterday. the Hawks and restricted free agent forward John Collins, who was such a big part of their run to the Eastern Conference Finals a year ago, have agreed to the deal they offered yesterday that we talked about. 5 years and $125 million. Collins stays with Atlanta. He averaged 18-7 while shooting 56% from the field for the Hawks last season. Look, people kept saying John who, and they weren't really familiar with him. But if you watch any Hawks games at all, you know next to Trae Young, second best player on that team all year long, consistently, was John Collins. And he got paid for it. So I think that's almost underpaid for a guy that brings as much as he brings to the table. But Collins is going to get 25 a year for the next five.
There was talk last year about them moving on from Collins. They're afraid he was going to want too much money. And then again, this offseason of, well, he's not going to sign this deal. He thinks he's a max player. He wants more money. Well, this is a good deal for both sides. Right, and Collins is 23, so he's not, you know, way out of line with Trae Young as far as the age is concerned. He's right in there in the path of what they're trying to build. So I think this works out for both sides. Collins gets a nice payday, 5 years, going to get some money. The Hawks lock in another important player for their team. I mean, look, when I worked in Atlanta, 2012, nobody gave a flying rat's tail about the Hawks.
Right.
You never saw somebody wear a Hawks hat or a Hawks shirt or jersey or anything. The Hawks were just completely irrelevant.
Phillips Arena at the time, as it was called, was just barren. There was no one going to games at that point.
The fact the Hawks now are relevant, that's good for basketball. It's good for the city. I mean, look, eventually this is going to be the turnaround the Rockets make, right? They were a really good team for a long time. Now they're bottoming out to restart. Eventually they're going to find their Trae Young and their John Collins. And okay, now we've got a couple of guys here, and we're going to build back up, and people are going to pay attention to us again. So it just goes to show you the rebuild process. Look, it's doable. It works. You can find those guys and then work your way back up. So hopefully it won't take the Rockets too long to get this done, but understand, like we were talking the other day, you know, 3 years, 4 years, you got to be realistic about how long it takes in the Western Conference.
I'm not being a hater on the Rockets. I'm the voice of reason and honesty and reality, which says in today's NBA, like you said, you make the run you made like the Rockets for 8 straight years, but you do everything in your power to hang on to it, because once you fall off, it's a 4 or 5 year proposition before you get back up again.
And even we talk about the difference between being a playoff contender and being a contender, right? Now that 10 teams make the playoffs, can you get into the playoffs in 3 years? Yeah, maybe, because you could probably get into the playoffs and be 5-6 games under 500. But that doesn't make you a real contender. You're going to get bounced out in the first round. You're going to get swept. And all that does is, well, your draft pick is on the outside of the lottery instead of the inside of the lottery. You probably moved from 14 to 17. Like it wasn't a big impact. And you know, one of the things, like, you go back to the Rockets, how they got on their run is, well, they were 42-40, they were 41-41. They're in that, we're going to be the last team in or the first team out. When you're in that middle of the pack every year, where you're always drafting very, very back of the lottery or just outside the lottery, that's kind of no man's land in the NBA.
You're getting Patrick Patterson.
And you're not getting the chance to draft the big-time talent at the front of the draft. And you're not able to really go out and get a big-time free agent to come in and push you over the hump and make you a 57-win team. You're just kind of constantly stuck in that same repeating mediocre spot. And that's why they wanted to get out of it. Okay, well, we're going to trade Luis Scola, and we're going to trade Kevin Martin, and we're going to trade Keller. We're going to trade everybody, and we're going to reset around Harden. And look, it took off a little faster.
But you had to have that dropped into your lap, too, because no one thought you could get Harden. No free agent, as you mentioned, including Dwight Howard, wanted to come here. And it was going to be a hard sell just to get the process started, regardless of where you finished and what your picks were. And then all of a sudden, lo and behold, because Sam Presti had a whole bunch of cap issues, and Daryl was the first message still on his recorder, he suddenly called Daryl Morey and said, make your best offer. I'm about to put Harden on the market. And boom, the deal was done.
But, you know, isn't that part of you know, team success, there's a little bit of luck involved.
Sure.
A little bit of having the right timing. If they don't make the Harden deal, then they probably bottom out. They're drafting at the top because they traded everybody. They were going to just completely reset. Then they got the Harden deal, and obviously everything changed once James Harden got here, and they were so much better his first year than they ever thought they were going to be. But most teams, that's how it works. We trade everybody. All right, we got to start from the bottom and move up. And it's how long do you hold on to them? You know, did they go too far? Okay, we've got Chris Paul. Now we're going to dump Chris Paul and a truckload of draft picks bring in Russ. Okay,
yeah.
Now we got to get rid of Russ. So we're going to trade Russ. We're going to bring back a guy who has like the same contract, but he only plays half the season. Did you hold on too long, try to go one too many rounds, and then in the end, the cupboard was bare and you had no money left?
Yeah, and now you're left holding the bag, literally, with assets basically at a minimum, draft picks at a minimum after this season. And so they did what they had to do. If nothing else, four 19-year-olds are guys you're going to develop. They're not all going to be stars. Some are going to play roles. Some are going to pan out. Some may not. But you did everything right that you had to do to try and keep the train moving in the right direction to keep you on that 4 to 5 year path. Because one misstep or more, and you become the Sacramento Kings. You become a team that's going to, instead of 3 to 4 to 5, you're looking at 5 to 6 to 7. And then it's looking to be a lot more painful if you're a Rockets fan. So the other move that was made today, and I want to get your impressions on this, especially knowing New York, Kemba Walker was a guy that was much like Chris Paul 2 years ago, which was basically moved to Oklahoma City because there were picks involved so Sam Presti could continue to control the draft for the next several seasons. And in the process, he had promised Walker, like he promised Paul, we're going to do our best to find you a new home. Well, they couldn't do it via trade. And evidently, Kemba Walker was willing to give up some of the 2 years and 70-plus million that was still left on his deal, and they worked on a buyout today. He's out in OKC. He's joining the Knicks.
This is an interesting move for the Knicks because a backcourt of Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier is way better than, you know, Elfrid Payton, you know, and the team that could not score at all against the Hawks in the postseason last year. How healthy is Kemba?
That's a big question, right?
And for a guy who was very durable in Charlotte, he's been dealing with a lot of injuries since he got to Boston. And last year, maybe his worst year as a pro.
He sat out a lot of games. He hurt the Celtics in many ways because of it.
He missed half the season. And then, you know, when he did play, he clearly didn't look right. His knee was a little balky. His shot wasn't there, which usually when your shot's not there, it's an issue with your legs. And lo and behold, if Kemba can be healthy, this is a great deal for the Knicks. We'll wind up paying him probably $10 million. Which, you know, if he gave up $10 to $12 million and he gets it back from the Knicks, it's almost like offset language. But his health, this is a dice throw for the Knicks, who last year were better than anybody thought, but they've been more or less awful for 20 years.
They also overachieved. And I'll just say it right now. In order for the Knicks to take the next step, they better not max out Julius Randle.
Oh, that'll be bad.
Because I think he showed you his true colors in the playoffs, just like the team did. And I don't think that's a guy that you build around.
He's a good player.
Good player.
He's not a top two guy.
He's better than Christian Wood, Rockets fans. And even he isn't worth a max contract.
Oh, no. And the idea of I'm eligible for a max contract, therefore I deserve one, that, you know, every basketball player tries to push, that's not how it works. And that's how teams get broken.
What doesn't get broken is the second half of the show. That's coming up next. Keep it right where you got it as we continue to roll on. Pat, Tyler, and myself, it's the Press Box at ESPN.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Hey! 90 in the books, 90 still to go. Second half of the show as we wave on wave to you as we pass on by, wherever you may be driving in the big city of Houston, Texas. I mentioned one of the hit songs of the man that is known as Pat Green because of the fact that Pat Green is coming to a town near you on August the 9th at one of our favorite spots where we're going to be on Friday, 5 Under Golf, in a really, really cool venue. And we get a chance to catch up with Pat Green right now. Pat, welcome to the show. As a true Texan, always good to have Texans on the program. How are you doing today?
Man, I'm great. Thanks for having me on the show, guys. And just so thankful for as pretty much everybody that works in the entertainment world. I've never been a dancer or anything like that, but I'm an entertainer. And I'm just glad to be going back to work.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. And by the way, Patrick Creighton, who I work with here, will be chiming in a second. He is a performing dancer. He likes Stage 9 a lot of times, but he has a different name when he does it, an outfit.
Is it Cheyenne or?
It's Magic P. It's Playoff P sometimes, too. The G-string is not something you want to see, Pat.
I don't even know what Stage 9 is.
It's the furthest stage in the back. They can't put you in the front and center mode.
I just love that we're going through this exercise of making fun of each other as fellas on a sports show. And it makes me happy that this is still alive.
No doubt. We keep it light around here, sir, but we also get down to business because it's great that you're going to be in this neck of the woods performing. But I want to get to a serious question with you because we've seen it in sports, too. The fact that we were talking about last night's Astros-Dodgers game had 50,000-plus people in it. After what we've been through with the pandemic, and obviously it hits you guys just like it hits the teams and the athletes, you guys want to be out there doing what you do, making contact with your fans, reaching out in concerts, doing what you do to kind of bring the joy to people. How difficult has it been to get through this pandemic, and how great is it for you to get back out on the road?
I'm not going to even sugarcoat it. It's been the longest, on a professional level, it's been the longest year of my life. And, you know, you can sing all you want, but without the people listening, without the fans, man, it really just doesn't bear any weight. So I know that I can speak for pretty much every professional athlete and myself and for any other musician out there, man, without the folks that pay to come watch us play, without us giving them respect, by performing well, man, it's a tough thing. So coming back to work, getting back to it, we've got, I'm doing a show this weekend with some crazy bunch of guys, Cole Wetzel, Parker McCollum. We've got, I don't know, 30-something thousand tickets sold to that show. So I'm excited to get out there and play for some big crowds.
You know, Pat, in every performer's career early on, you start playing and you have this balance of how far am I willing to go to fully commit? You know, I probably make more money doing this, or, you know, it's easier for me to go that way. There's usually like this like one linchpin moment that kind of propels you forward into, okay, this is what I'm chasing my dream full time, where all systems go. What was that moment for you where, you know, you made the decision based on something? All right, I am going all in on my music starting right now.
I can really kind of boil it down to one moment in 1997. And you're going to laugh at this, really. I'm sure you will. I hope you think it's funny, but we did a show in Houston, Texas, at a place called the Firehouse that has now burned down.
Yeah, just recently. Yep. You know,
great, great venue, and you know, fun for the small band, fun for us. You know, anyway. So I had a buddy, Greg Henry, who did my T-shirts, and the only reason why he got to do my T-shirts is he had a credit card and I didn't. Anyway, he would buy my T-shirts and sell them, and then he'd get a cut. But we made $1,000 back then, which I think would probably be about $2,000 now. Not, and what I'm saying is not much. And my comment to him after that show where we sold $2,000 worth of T-shirts, I said, where are we going to spend it all? And obviously, nowadays, that is kind of a funny thing to think. But I knew that if we could do, you know, that kind of money in one night, we could do it every night. And my dad felt the same way. And I was working for him at the time. And he basically fired me on the spot and said, look, you obviously have a dream and you're obviously starting to have some success. And if you don't chase it, you'll regret it for the rest of your life.
So you chased it. And now 20 plus years later, 15 Billboard Hot Country songs that were on the charts. The one that I had mentioned, Wave on Wave, got as high as number 3. But the thing is you're no Milli Vanilli, Pat. I mean, you're not a one-hit wonder. Did you think when you got into it, when your dad fired you and said, you got to do this, son, that 20-some-odd years later, you'd still be touring and you'd still be packing them in and still performing, going, this is my life's passion, and I'm going to live it out. And that's a pretty amazing thing to be able to say.
I think I would have taken one hit, but like you said, 15 top 40 songs, and you know, I number 3. You know who's never had a number 1? Jimmy Buffett. I don't think the Rolling Stones have ever had a number 1. What I'm getting at is that I think all of us, just to have a job doing this for your entire life, that's just a lucky, lucky thing. And sure, it has its pitfalls and danger and all a measure of just crazy things that you have to deal with. But, man, I love every minute of my life.
He's Texas singer-songwriter Pat Green with us on the HRMP guest line. And he'll be performing Monday, August 9th at a 500 Golf Center in Beaumont. You can get tickets now. Just go to 500golf.com. Click on the banner at the top of the page. You can see you can buy all the tickets. Get them before they're sold out. Now, Pat, you've toured with lots of famous musicians. None probably bigger than Willie Nelson. How did that first conversation go between you and Willie? Like, how did that connection happen?
That's another funny thing. That's a really direct question. I remember my first conversation with him. I was doing a show with him down in College Station, Texas. Yep. And it was a, you know, an enormous crowd, and I was the opening act, and I was coming up, and I was coming on pretty strong. And I'm not trying to, you know, make something out of nothing. I'm just saying it was pretty big year for me. Anyway, it was raining that night. And, after the show, after my set and Willie's set was over, I went on Willie's bus just to hang out and, you know, get some FaceTime with him. And, Gator, who was his, like as an alligator, Gator, who's his driver's his bus, came in and said, all right, Willie, they're all lined up and ready. And, I mean, I'm not kidding. It was a deluge rain, right? And he was going to go out and sign autographs for these how many ever people they had lined out down the side of the bus and out into the parking lot. He stood there in the rain. And before he went out there, I said, hey, man, you know you're Willie Nelson, right? You don't have to go out and sign autographs in the rain. And he said to me, and I quote, I've been trying for these guys to want my autographs for 30 years. I'll be damned if I turn one of them down now. And I think that was a pretty defining moment for me, too. I really, if you don't understand how important the fans are and how important the people that are making your living are, you really don't understand much.
That's awesome. That's a great story. And another, obviously, a Texas legend in Willie Nelson. So we got the show coming up on Monday. A lot of people looking forward to seeing you. It's a really cool venue. Obviously, it's a golf range, too. But the way they set it up, it's an intimate venue. A lot of people can get up and close and personal with you, and you can interact with the true Texans that love to follow and have followed your music for so long, Pat. We really appreciate the time. Have a great weekend, and everybody looks forward to seeing you on Monday here in Beaumont.
Same to you guys. Thanks for having me on the air. Have a great day.
There you go. Pat Green, who's going to be performing at 5 Under on Monday, the 9th. We're going to be there on Friday. And you can get all the information while you see us about everything that's going to be happening on Monday when you see him. So that's going to be fun as well. We're going to continue to roll on. We've got lots more sports to get to. We got questions that people have about the Astros. Someone wanted to talk about Carmelo Anthony. and joining the L.A. Lakers and finally being reunited with LeBron James. Well, I got news for you. This isn't 20 years ago. I don't know that it's going to be the monumental effect that anybody might have seen. Do I need to remind anybody? Melo tried it here, and it didn't work?
I love the signing for reasons that you probably don't quite get.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that as well. Lots more as we wrap up hour number two with the next segment. Still got 60 minutes after that to get to even more. So hang right with us right where you are. It is the Press Box. It's ESPN.
ESPN 97.5. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
You heard the man. Love having my buddy, Patrick Creighton, sitting right to my right as we talk sports and other things with you on the Press Box. Always love having Tyler Scott a part of the program as well as we have been kicking around a whole lot of subjects. One of the things we didn't talk about in day two of the free agency that people want to get into a little bit is the fact that the AARP Lakers, getting older, some people don't think better, but some people think that they are. They dipped into the fountain of youth a little bit by Carmelo Anthony joining the Lakers and his good friend Carmelo Anthony for the, LeBron James for the first time after they always talked about it. Because, you know, on the banana boat, it was him, Dwayne Wade, Carmelo Anthony, and Chris Paul. The original banana boat. There's another one with the Arizona guys. Those pictures, if you see them, you'll never be able to erase them from your memory. I'm just giving you fair warning. Luke Walton, guys with bike shorts on, just not Richard Jefferson. Anyway, so I'm not sure. Everybody's trying to, there's Kendrick Perkins trying to talk up the Lakers. I think, look, really savvy moves made by Marks, the GM of the Nets, in the fact that Patty Mills, they needed a backup point guard. Re-signing Brown was one thing. He's a really valuable piece for them. Re-signing Blake Griffin, who played really, really well, Charlie Polillo, when he joined the Nets.
Little fountain of youth there.
Yeah, after Charlie basically said he had nothing left in the tank. He wouldn't dunk again. He wouldn't play well again. And I was adamant that if he got out of Detroit, I think he had a little something left. And now they add Patty Mills. Patty Mills is a guy that has been just a massively valuable piece playing a role for the Spurs. And obviously with what the Spurs have been doing, and again what they did yesterday in trying to move DeMar DeRozan along to the Bulls so that they could get more youth, more draft picks, and more of a rebuild going, they don't see a reason to bring Patty Mills back. And Patty Mills found a greener pasture for a chance to get a couple more rings possibly with the Nets. Of the two teams, I think the Nets did a better job of getting the supporting cast that they need to play roles. But I'm not ready to shut the door. Anytime you have, and there's a lot of people crapping on the Lakers because they don't think Russ is going to be able to step up. I'm on the firm belief that Russ is a point guard that they need because they don't need a point guard that's going to shoot a lot, but he can push the issue and he can get them in transition. And if they stay healthy, there's no reason why they shouldn't be the number one seed in the West. But when you start looking at the guys that they added, Kent Bazemore, okay. Does he do anything for you?
6 years ago.
Right, exactly. Wayne Ellington, a shooter, but can he still? I don't know. But they brought back THT, Horton Tucker, a younger guy that they needed. They got Kendrick Nunn, a really good young point guard from Miami, who was really good for them, an undrafted player. And then they got Carmelo Anthony.
I love the deal for Melo. You know why?
Why?
Because I want the Lakers to fail.
There you go.
I want the Lakers to fail miserably. And you know what? Them signing Carmelo doesn't get them closer to a title. It probably pushes them further away. Because the Lakers probably don't need a guy to play 8 minutes and take 8 shots off the bench. They probably need a guy to come off the bench who could actually play some defense, and Carmelo can't guard his own shadow. Not to mention the idea of, you know, the idea of Carmelo in like the Vinny Microwave Johnson role. Well, Carmelo has to have the ball in his hands, which means everything has to go through him and everything has to be designed for him. And if he's not hitting, there's no reason to have him on the floor. And people go, oh, well, you know, did you see that game where Carmelo shot like 6 of 8 and he had 14 points? Yeah. And then like the next three games, he shot 2 of 9 and he had 4 points and 4 turnovers. That's who Carmelo is. Mm-hmm. So you got to see him. And, you know, before he came here, for years, I said, you do not want Carmelo on the Rockets. You do not want Carmelo on the Rockets. He doesn't make anyone around him better. All he does is stop the basketball.
Well, and the thing that I said, too, was Daryl Morey is one of those guys, like, when you had a chance to get Apple before it became Apple and you were chasing that stock, when you didn't get it, there were guys that said, I got to have it. I got to have it in my portfolio. And then years later, overpaid to say that they got Apple. That was Daryl with Melo. Because I was there when they rented a house in River Oaks and brought the Breakfast Club in to cater breakfast and tried to kiss Carmelo's ass any which way they could to make the presentation of a lifetime because they thought he was the missing piece. And he didn't come here. And then 7 years later, Daryl could not erase from his memory he was the guy that got away and still put the full court press on him to bring him back when he wasn't the Melo of 7 years ago, and it ended miserably.
Let's not forget when he had the Melo flu and wasn't allowed to be around the team. The Lakers could have had him for a song. He was making the minimum. Right, because he got bought out in Atlanta, so he was making the minimum with the Rockets. The Lakers could have had him for a song, and they didn't want him. And that's just 2 years ago. So this idea Carmelo's going to be some big addition to the Lakers, he's not. The Blazers aren't going to miss him. So, like I said, I love it because he doesn't make the Lakers better. It's great. I hope they can sign a few more Carmelos.
All right, well, we've got Anna, who wants to get in here on Carmelo signing with the Lakers. Anna, what's going on? Welcome to the program.
Okay, my dog's name is Melo. He is a ball hog. I love my Melo. I live him from Syracuse. He gets paid not to play. I mean, if you can go that route, fucking work it, man. It's like the security guard, you know, wearing that uniform, you know. Getting paid.
Yeah. Anna, gotta warn you. You can't use language like that. This isn't serious radio. Congratulations on the catchy name for your dog, though, and the correlation with the ball hog.
Hey, there's a new Melo in the NBA, and he's LaMelo Ball, and he's really freaking good.
Boy, and based on what I saw when all those videos were hitting social media when he was playing overseas in AAU ball, he was a chucker. And the shot was ugly, pulling from 40. I was like, this guy's never going to be good. He's going to be the second ball brother that fails. I stand corrected because he got the shot corrected. He's a heck of a young player.
So there's you can now say you're named him after LaMelo Ball, and it's after somebody who really can play and can play well.
Yeah. So Rudy Gay goes 2 years, gets 12.1. Rudy Gay.
Good job,
age,
Rudy.
Still getting 6+ a year for 2 more. Patty Mills, same thing. 2 years, 12-1. Patty Mills still getting 6 a year. Talen Horton-Tucker, as I mentioned, back with the Lakers, 3 years and 32 mil. And then the sign and trade that I mentioned, the Bulls agree to a 3-year, $85 million sign and trade contract for DeMar DeRozan.
I love that deal for San Antonio.
Because of the draft picks or because of Thaddeus Young and El-Farouq Aminu?
Because they essentially could have lost DeMar DeRozan for absolutely nothing. And they were able to turn it into some kind of mild return with draft picks where, you know, I don't know where those draft picks will be, but they very easily could have lost DeRozan for absolutely nothing. So the fact that they managed to find a way to get value out of a non-value situation, I love that deal for them in that regard. They should have lost him for nothing. Does DeRozan make the Bulls markedly better? He's getting older. He's never been a three-point shooter. You know, he's probably better than what they had, but I still don't look at the Bulls and say, all right, well, Zach LaVine, Vucevic, DeRozan, I don't look at them as, like, a real contender. They're just, like, tier two. They're not the Bucks. They're not the Nets. They're not the Sixers. They're not the Celtics. They're the next group.
I agree with that. But look, I'll tell you this. And Popovich is savvy. And you know he likes foreign players, okay? But Markkanen was the guy that I thought would be a perfect fit in San Antonio. And because of all the moves that they've made with Ball and DeRozan and having to re-up on Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen was a guy that just absolutely screamed San Antonio Spur to me. And so I thought that he was going to be part of the mix, not Thad Young draft picks and Elfarik Aminu. Now, not to say that that wouldn't happen or couldn't happen still because he's still out there, but I just, every time, I think the Bulls really kind of stifled the growth of a guy that in his rookie year looked like he was going to be a star in this league in Markkanen. But I think Markkanen's got some talent. I think he's a Spurs-type player. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up in San Antonio.
If Markkanen stays in Chicago, Lonzo's going to be the best thing for him. Lonzo had this great rapport with Zion, and I still don't understand New Orleans making this decision that, oh, they have to move on from Lonzo Ball. Lonzo and Zion were clicking, and Lonzo got to New Orleans, fixed his shot, and became a 38% shooter from three. A guy who can handle the ball the way he does, he has incredible court vision, he can defend three positions really at a high level. And now he can shoot threes? Why did you need to move on from that guy so bad? His father wasn't bothering the Pellies the way he bothered the Lakers. Like, this was a dumb move to me for the Pelicans to let him go. That's probably the best move the Bulls made, was bringing in Lonzo.
I think you're right. I think that he had to redo his whole shot. He had to go back to square one and reconstruct a shot that was broken. Once he did that, he became a better than that. People don't realize he's a better than average three-point shooter to go with great court vision and seeing the floor. So I think that was a good pickup for the Bulls. I think Zach LaVine at max money, I'm not sold on that. Zach LaVine came into this league with a lot of holes in his game. He's gotten better. I don't know that he's max great for the Bulls, but at least, and DeMar DeRozan's a guy that is going to get all the money in the world. DeMar DeRozan, to me, is a guy that's all about DeMar DeRozan. That's a guy that's never going to fit on a true championship caliber team. But the Bulls will be relevant again in the East because the East isn't that great. And as you said, they've got enough talent to carry them through the majority of the season.
And all that talk about DeMar DeRozan, oh, I'm just going to take he's going to take less money, like little money, and go play for the Lakers. Yeah, we see how well that worked out. 85 million reasons to decide not to be a Laker. I mean, I would have taken him too, not going to lie.
There you have it. All right, we'll continue to roll through the final hour of the program. Coming up next, we've got Astros and Dodgers on tap again tonight from Chavez Ravine as Max Scherzer makes his Dodger debut. And oh, wouldn't it be sweet to end the two-game series with another W for your orange and blue with Jake Odorizzi on the mound. That's a possibility. Lots of things to talk about as we get to the final 60 minutes. Keep it right where you got it. It's the Press Box on ESPN.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.